This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
This is E.O. Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network News.
The Humanist Network News.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
It's July 25th, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. For those of you just joining us for the first time, humanism is seeking without religion the best in and for human beings. At the end of the program, we will be paying tribute to a pillar of the humanist community.
But first, the main feature on our show is Camp Quest, summer camp that's beyond belief.
Camp Quest is the nation's first sleepaway summer camp for children from atheist, humanist, and other free-thinking families. Joining us today in the H&N recording room is Amanda Metzkes, president of Camp Quest, Inc.
Hi.
And while we fix Amanda's microphone, listeners may be familiar with Camp Quest because you may have seen them on the news. And Jess, I believe we have a very prominent placement mention of Camp Quest on a very reputable news program. Do you have that clip queued up?
I sure do.
Why don't we play that for our listeners right now?
Thread number five, camp. Not that kind of camp. Though we must remain vigilant against that stuff, too. I'm talking about Camp Quest, a network of summer camps dedicated to sunny day fun from a strict atheist and agnostic perspective. As their catchphrase says, it's beyond belief. Though Camp Quest provides regular camp activities like hiking and horseback riding, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer, children also, quote, learn about the canons of rational thought, critical thinking, and scientific inquiry. And in one activity, quote, try to prove that invisible unicorns, as a metaphor for God, don't exist. The campers are also given other untenable philosophical challenges, like proving tetherball is fun. Well, Camp Quest, here's another activity. How about canoeing on a lake of hellfire for all eternity? Sleep tight, kids.
Okay, so who was that?
Well, that was Stephen Colbert. Last summer, he put Camp Quest as number five on the threat down. He read about us in the Cincinnati Inquirer, and yeah. And that was his response.
Do you go canoeing on Lake Fire?
We go canoeing, but on the Little Miami River, not on the Lake of Hellfire.
Now, what I heard you actually dedicated your tetherball courts at one of the Camp Quests to Stephen Colbert. Is that right?
Yes. In Ohio this year, we moved to a camp that had tetherball courts. And believe it or not, the kids loved the tetherball courts. So I think we've proven that tetherball is fun.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, give us a little bit of information about Camp Quest. So Camp Quest is the first sleepaway summer camp for kids from non-religious families. We do a lot of typical summer camp stuff, but we also do critical thinking, science education, famous free thinkers, things that kind of allow kids to explore ideas about religion, ideas about humanism, atheism, without sort of telling them you have to think X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. Now, Amanda, you actually have been very busy this summer doing real major media placements, not for Comedy Central. NPR, there's a major magazine. The Chicago Tribune recently wrote an article about Camp Quest. Bible camps and summer camps are pretty common. Why do you suppose the media is so interested in Camp Quest?
I think a lot of people find it a little bit provocative that we're talking about these issues with kids as young as 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Issues of what? Atheism?
Issues of atheism, free thought, humanism. Issues basically questioning the kind of received wisdom in our culture that, you know, well, of course, there's a supreme being out there who loves us and cares about us.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's a little bit beyond the pale, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of controversial.
So you mentioned eight-year-olds. What's the average age of a camper?
Well, the average is probably somewhere around 12 or 13. The age range runs from 8 to 17.
Well, Amanda, you just returned from Camp Quest West in California, where you conducted about 25 interviews with campers and counselors. So let's hear a little audio montage of the campers and talking about their worldviews.
I really think of myself as an atheist.
Free thinker.
Well, I think I'm a bright and a super because I believe in ghosts, but I
by don't believe in God.
A combination of atheist and freethinker.
I think of myself as an atheist and freethinker.
I don't know.
I'm not completely sure, but partly atheist, partly Jewish.
What would be in between atheist and agnostic? I don't know if there's a word for that, but if there is, that would be me.
I think of myself as a humanist, but I don't believe in God, but I feel that it's okay if you do.
How do you think of yourself? Do you think of yourself as a humanist, as an atheist, as an agnostic, as a freethinker, as something else? Some of the above, all of the above, none of the above?
I'm probably like 75% atheist because I still have like some superstitions.
Like, what are your superstitions?
Well, I sort of like believe that like trees can like think and stuff.
Well, I sort of call myself a free thinker because I like to think for myself. Mostly atheist, a humanist, and a free thinker because my parents are mostly atheists and humanists.
A humanist.
And what does being a humanist mean to you?
Basically means I don't believe in any God.
Okay.
It's just like an atheist, except atheists are more serious.
That is amazing to listen to. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard children that young. I've never heard the word atheist come out of a child's mouth before, I don't think.
Or even just be able to express anything that you think that clearly.
Yeah.
It's pretty profound.
That's they're pretty articulate, the kids at Camp Quest. I think a lot of the people that come visit us and do programs and everything are really impressed by how well the kids can express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of expressing themselves, the kids in that montage were, in order, Valerie, Avi, Alex, Autumn, Roddy, Caroline, Ifat, Barry, Catherine, Falcon, Juju, Anna, and Liam. And just in case anyone out there is concerned, all of their parents signed releases that allowed them to be interviewed, but to protect their privacy, we're only going by their first names.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you were rather busy.
I had a lot of fun doing interviews.
So, Amanda, I need to ask you, do you think that these children are, they say they're an atheist because their parents are an atheist? I mean, one camper mentioned that. I'm a humanist because my parents are humanists. I mean, it's a little heavy to hear, you know, someone so young declare. But then again, if you're a Christian or if you're Jewish, you typically just take whatever your parents are, right?
I think that definitely kids are to some extent parroting what their parents think, mm-hmm. just like they would on politics, just like they would on any other issue.
Right.
But I also think that most of the parents of these kids are really aware of how much influence they have on their kids' worldviews, and they really take pains to expose their kids to different ideas and let their kids know that it's okay if they think differently than their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes and no is like my short answer to your question.
Yeah.
Unless the teenagers are definitely rebelling against their parents. Like, I'm sure there's some angry religious parents.
Well, I know when I was in fourth grade, I used to tell people I was a Republican. Yeah. So what else do they do at Camp Quest? We mentioned tetherball. What else?
Well, we do a lot of regular summer camp activities, you know, swimming and hiking and play games and all those kinds of things. I think people sometimes get the wrong idea and think that, you know, we're just doing all education all the time, but we make sure that it's like traditional summer camp too, where you, you know, make silly crafts that you take home to your folks and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Got to have a good macaroni frame.
Important.
Pictures. Absolutely.
Well, actually, I asked the campers what their favorite thing at Camp Quest was.
Well, I really like eating.
Probably the food.
Obviously the food and...
Food.
Food. Yummy.
And what's your favorite thing to do here so far?
Eat.
Well, Jess, I gather that macaroni frames wouldn't last too long around these campers.
Well, actually, there are some other things at camp they liked other than just eating.
Archery, juggling, the team games.
I think I liked the field trip when we went to the river and the cave.
Well, I really like playing the harmonica and swimming in the lake. It's really fun.
And I see that you have your harmonica there. Do you want to play us a little bit on your harmonica for the show? You do great. Okay. So that was Catherine on the harmonica there, and we have an interview coming up with another camper who is from North Carolina, actually, and came all the way out to Camp Quest West because the Camp Quest in her area in the Smoky Mountains took a year off this summer. All right, so here we are at Camp Quest West interviewing some campers about how their week has gone so far. Tell us your name and where you're from. Just go by first name.
Valerie. Charlotte, North Carolina.
Is this your first time at Camp Quest?
No, this is my first time at Camp Quest West. Before, I was at the Camp Quest in Tennessee.
All right, and how is this Camp Quest different from the other Camp Quest?
Well, at the other Camp Quest, instead of a lake, there was a river. And before, it was one big cabin with boys section off and the girls section off. And there was air conditioning. And this one does not.
Tell us a little bit about your kiosk. What is the name of your kiosk?
The name of our kiosk is the Silver Hellbenders.
And I understand you came up with that name.
Yes, I did.
And what made you decide to suggest that as a name?
Well, because I thought it sounded cool since we're atheists. It's sort of atheist. It sort of sounds interesting because hell is what Christians and other religions think that people are going to if they're bad, and some people think that atheists are going to hell. So I thought it'd just sound cool to pick the Hellbenders.
And what is a Hellbender, actually?
A Hellbender is the largest salamander in the U.S.
Tell us a little bit about the skit you're going to be performing in tonight.
Well, our group is doing a skit. It's really flip-flopped. We're doing it where the princess is trying to rescue the prince, and it turns out that the prince is evil, and the dragon turns out to be nice.
Wow, I love that Valerie chose the name Hellbenders for, what was it, for their team?
It's for her kiosk.
Oh, okay, because I actually took a vacation recently to go find some hellbenders in Western New York. They're very gentle salamanders, 2 feet long, and they're actually in danger. But it's perfect because the atheists really aren't so dangerous either. So it's like the perfect name.
And what's a kiosk?
Well, in California, we actually have three-sided cabins, so they're not called cabins; they're called kiosks.
Oh, it's a lean-to.
Right.
Okay. That's what we call them here on the East Coast.
Ah, okay. So the other thing Valerie talked about that I wanted to mention is she talked about our skits. And I know a lot of camps have, you know, some drama and some skits. Ours actually were specifically the kids were creating humanist myths. And they had a couple of elements they had to include. So I was in Valerie's cabin and our kiosk. And our kiosk had to include a dragon, a cave, and a talking book in our skit. And then the skit was supposed to present a humanist moral. Mm-hmm. And so our moral was, don't judge a dragon by its scales.
I see. Now, Amanda, every summer camp, and maybe I was this kid at the summer camp I went to, every summer camp has the one boy or girl who's hopped up on bug juice, shall we say. Kind of Dennis or Denise the Menace. Did you have any sort of characters at Camp West West?
We'd like to introduce you here to Juju.
Well, I like the games, and I like messing with the staff.
What do you mean by messing with the staff?
Poking them and making nicknames.
Poking them?
And how do they react when you bother them, the staff?
Well, the first couple of days, you're like, huh, is that a bird chirping?
Who is this? I thought Camp Quest was about teaching children morals and ethics.
Well, in the same interview, here's what she told me she learned.
I've learned that if you treat other people the way that you want to be treated, then they'll treat you the same way. And if you do really bad stuff, you could get sent home or a note home or a call home.
I like that at the atheist camp, at least, the kids who are the menace are able to admit it openly and honestly.
Yeah, you know, honesty is definitely one of our humanist values, right, that we try to promote here at Camp Quest. Here's Juju's friend Catherine talking about the ethics.
I like doing ethics because it helps me a lot. Pretty much I learned that many ways to solve a problem and help other people make good choices.
Now, Amanda, is Catherine helping her friend Juju make good choices with the poking of the counselors?
Well, I think Catherine was trying to help Juju make good choices.
All right. Some of the listeners out there have probably seen the film Jesus Camp. Now, Camp Quest is a far cry from being the atheist equivalent of Jesus Camp. But you do work in, it's not simply tetherball and canoeing. You do work in the humanism, free thought, philosophy element. How do you approach that at Camp Quest?
Well, so we try to make sure all of our activities are very interactive, where it's not just someone coming in and lecturing to the kids, but it's the kids engaging in some process of learning things for themselves. So we try to teach them to think critically. We try to teach them science, a little bit of science education. Those are the kinds of things we sort of focus on.
Do they like this?
They do. They do. Here's some of them talking about their favorite free thought activities.
I liked when Minga and Paul came for the Dowsing Rods, and then it all turned out to be fake.
Can you explain to us how the Dowsing Rod thing worked?
You have to tell yourself in your mind that if there's water somewhere, to find the water, and then the Dowsing Rods will cross, but it's like all in your head. But in your brain, it sends a message all the way through your hands. And so it's like mind type stuff.
So does it work if you don't know the water is there?
No.
So the purpose of the dowsing rod activity was kind of to show the difference between science and pseudoscience. And Paul Geisert and Minga Futrell kind of showed the kids that dowsing rods work a lot like a Ouija board. They move because you're sending a message subconsciously to your hands to move when you know the water's there. And when you don't, they don't move. So they're kind of a pseudoscientific thing. And we also had a couple of other sort of free thought superstars come in to lead some of our activities. Michael Newdow, who brought the case to remove Under God from the Pledge of Allegiance all the way to the Supreme Court, was coming to Camp Quest. And one of our campers, Barry, was really excited about that.
And I'm really excited about going over to see Michael Newdow and when he's going to be talking about the lemon test. And I am ready for when he speaks about that because I have memorized a bunch of stuff about the lemon test and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's awesome. So what do you think about the lemon test?
I think it's very nice and organized with its three prongs to see if the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights is violated or not. And other than that, I just think it's an interesting fact.
I wish when I was his age, I was smart enough to know what the lemon test is. I mean, even today, I'm ashamed to admit, I have no idea what the lemon test is.
They're pretty amazing kids, pretty well informed. But, you know, they're regular kids too, so.
So were any of them going through Nintendo withdrawal? I know when I went to summer camp, I was dreaming in Super Mario pixels.
Definitely had some kids who missed their, you know, their iPods and their Nintendo DSs and all those things because we allowed them to play with the electronics, but only during free time.
Yeah. You know what I always missed when I was a kid? I would go and sleep over at my friend's house, but then I would call my mom every night and I would say, "Come pick me up." I got homesick all the time. I could never go to sleepover camps because I was too scared to be away from my mom for a week.
Oh well, we definitely had a little homesickness at Camp Quest West.
I've never been away from my parents for a week.
Yeah, a week's kind of a long time, huh?
Aww.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
I went hiking. You're listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. We're speaking with Amanda Metzkis, president of Camp Quest, Inc. And during the break, we heard an excerpt from the famous camp song, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, by Alan Sherman.
And before that, we heard from our little homesick camper, Alex. My heart goes out to him. How'd that end up working out for him?
Well, about a half an hour later, we checked in with him again, and here's what he had to tell us then.
Belly button plug, belly button plug. Now in stores. There used to be earplugs, but now there's belly plugs. Now it's always for rich people.
Gee, that's better. Mata fada, kindly disregard this letter.
Of course, that's the way it goes with homesickness at summer camp. The minute the sun comes out, everyone's okay again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, Amanda, we've been having a lot of fun so far in the program, hearing from the kids, but I think it's time to get to the nuts and bolts. What is the difference between Camp Quest West, where these recordings were taken, and Camp Quest? And you're the president of Camp Quest, Inc., so what's going on?
Well, there are six different Camp Quest programs around the country. They're each independently run by a group of volunteers. Camp Quest West is in California, and our other programs are in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. That's the one that had to take a year off this summer. They're searching for a new director.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the original one in Ohio that started in 1996 and kind of kicked this whole thing off. There's one in Michigan, there's one in Minnesota, and there's one in Ontario, which is actually going on this week.
Mm-hmm.
Does it cost the same to send my kid to each of them?
Actually, no. And the reason for that is that the different camps have kind of different levels of services and amenities. And so, like, the Ohio camp includes a high ropes course for the older campers. And so, it's a little bit more expensive than, say, Camp Quest West. But also, Camp Quest West and the Ohio camp use a different campership and fundraising model. So, in Ohio, we ask parents, if you have trouble paying, let us know and we'll work out something with you. And so we kind of fundraise for camperships for families that have financial need. In California, they fundraise and then they drop the fees for everyone across the board.
Mm.
So it's sort of a different model.
I also heard in California, they don't have four walls in the camp.
Yeah, the lack of the fourth wall makes things a little bit cheaper.
So what is the relationship between the six Camp Quest programs? How come they all use the same name if they're different?
Well, so when the Ohio camp started, after it was going for a couple of years, people kind of contacted Edwin Kagan and said, hey, we'd really like one of these closer to us. Can you come start one there? And he said, well, no, I can't, but you can.
Right.
And so these other camps started using the Camp Quest name on the Camp Quest model, kind of doing the same mission, but run by independent groups of people. And now as we've grown...
So it's like a franchise model almost.
Like the Subway of summer camp.
Yeah, where you have to agree to like a minimum statement, I take it?
Yeah. So you agree to support our mission statement and you agree to run basically a safe quality program.
Mm-hmm. Now this is where the Institute for Humanist Studies plays in. The Institute is about to award $1 million given since the beginning of its IHS grant fund program. Every year, the Institute awards about $100,000 to free thought projects around the world. And one of the projects that IHS has consistently funded is Camp Quest, because we have an emphasis on youth programs and also programs that can be replicated. We want to give you a grant to become the experts so you can teach the other people how to become the experts. How is that going so far, Amanda?
It's going really well. So the first couple camps kind of got off the ground. And now that we've got six programs, we sort of need more coordination. And mm-hmm. so that's what I'm sort of doing in Albany at my office that the Institute for Humanist Studies has generously given me to work out of.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're trying to kind of make more of a process. So there's going to be kind of an application if you want to start a Camp Quest. And
right.
then the boards of the existing camps will... Or the board of Camp Quest, Inc., which will be made up of representatives of the existing camps, mm-hmm. will... sort of decide, you know, do we think that we should extend the Camp Quest license, if you will, to this other camp.
So where can we expect new Camp Quest programs to pop up in the future? Now that you're here in Albany, New York, you're very close to the New York metropolitan area where millions of people live. Are we going to have a camp around here sometime soon?
We're looking into the Catskills as sort of a place that's easy to get to from New York City, easy to get to from the Capital District in Albany, supports Philly, Western Mass, Connecticut.
New Jersey.
New Jersey, right. So I've been talking with some volunteers who are interested in helping out with starting a camp there. We're also thinking about possibly trying out a little bit of a new model there where we do like a family camp. So it'd be open to younger kids and everyone who comes would come with their parents.
Oh.
And we do some separate programs for the parents and the kids and then some programs for families to do together. Because we have a lot of parents who come to drop off their kids and they say, well, can I stay? Yeah. This seems like fun. So we thought, well, why not?
Well, it's one of our other office mates, Allison Bates of the Secular Student Alliance, has been talking about wanting to go to adult summer camp for this whole summer. What would that involve? Would you get to play tetherball? Did the adults get to play?
I think, yeah, the adults could play tetherball all they wanted. All
right, well, sign me up.
I still can't go.
Oh, you just
too homesick, Jess.
Okay, so what other, you're working on expanding the programs. How about strengthening the national Camp Quest presence? What types of things do you work on to do that?
So one thing that we launched this year that I think has been really effective is our website at www.camp-quest.org is now a common front page that links you to all of the Camp Quests. It used to be that each camp had its own URL, and so when we would talk to the media or talk to parents, there would be all this confusion. Well, which Camp Quest is this page that I'm on? And, you know, we even had a parent register for the Ohio camp when she meant to register for one of the other camps one year. So this common website's been really effective. We're also doing more joint media relations, and the Institute for Humanist Studies actually has been helping us out with that, which has been really great. So we kind of have the national acting as sort of our spokesperson for the Camp Quest programs.
Yeah, so you're a central go-to person. If I'm a reporter in California and I need to try to interview a parent or a family, I can go to you and you'll track down the people I need from any camp across the country, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's great.
And then also, you know, helping out the camps with fundraising because the volunteers on the ground are doing so much work putting the program together and recruiting the campers. And, you know, if we can help them out with helping send some campership money their way, you know, putting them in touch with donors in their area who are interested in supporting their specific camp. That's something we want to try to do more of.
Now, donations are tax deductible to Camp Quest because...
It's true. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We could also use some money to help support the national. So if anyone out there is interested in that, we would not turn you away.
Okay, so you're a nonprofit. What about the are there any paid employees?
Not at this point, actually. All of us are volunteers. So our camp directors, each of the camps, all of the staff who come work at camp for a week, they donate a week of their time, and usually they pay their own travel expenses to get there.
Wow.
So we've got some really dedicated people.
What kinds of people do you actually have volunteering to be counselors?
Oh, we have quite a wide range of people, actually. We've got, you know, lawyers, doctors, engineers, lots of retired people, lots of college students. It really runs the gamut.
Well, Amanda, you and I were putting together a nice little segment of counselors and their thoughts on Camp Quest. So why don't we play that for our listeners now?
Sounds good.
Tell us who you are and what brings you to the staff of Camp Quest West this year.
I'm Lee McDade, and that's a long and really boring story, but here I am. I'm from Sacramento, although I'm originally from New Mexico, and I'm the astronomy coordinator at Sacramento City College.
My name is Drew Gorham, and I'm from Fresno, California.
And is this your first year on staff at Camp Quest?
Very first year, just got here a couple days ago. Currently, I'm a student at University of Pacific, studying philosophy, and summer breaks are completely free, so decided to head up here. Found out about it through Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion. Kind of got inspired by those recent bestsellers and decided to get up and get active in the free thought community.
My name is Nico Theris, and I come from many places, but currently is from Laguna Beach. Next January, I'll be 80 years old, And part of the pleasure of coming to this camp is the kids make me feel younger.
Well, I'm Dwayne Dietz. I retired from NASA as a research engineer.
Sean Laney. I'm from Rancho Cordova, California. That's near Sacramento.
How did you get involved in teaching archery for Camp Quest?
Well, it's a case of insufficient reluctance to volunteer. I called Chris and was really excited about my kids going to Camp Quest and said, hey, if there's anything you need, let me know and I'll be glad to help. She goes, well, we need an archery instructor. And so I ended up driving down to Santa Rosa, taking the certification class and over a weekend, and here we are.
My name is David Johnson. I'm from Petaluma, California. I like the pseudoscience and teaching the kids the difference between science and pseudoscience, because sometimes in life it's hard to tell when someone's trying to trick you with something that may not really be science.
The kids are really cool, really smart too. I'm really impressed by their intellect. And
the kids seem to really be involved in stuff, which is nice, which means there's at least 2 hours out of the day where they're busy finding ways of defying the laws of physics, and I don't have to watch them so close because, you know, the universe will keep them in line.
I think the kids have had a blast, and I think it's been a great balance between philosophical conversation, free-thinking conversation and activities, and just good old-fashioned fun, you know, swimming and games and things like that. So I think there's a really good balance here as far as activities go.
I guess technically I'm an agnostic. For all intents and purposes, I might as well be an atheist. I don't believe in a personal God. I don't. It's not an issue I've really been militant about. You know, a lot of people, when they have religious experiences, it's like they have a moment of conversion. But when you go the other way to not believing in any particular religious tradition, it's always seemed to me, it isn't like you wake up one day and go, wow, I see the light. It's more like it's kind of a slow evolution. That's what happened with me, at least.
We're just people who are free thinkers, skeptics, and we're just regular people like everybody else, really.
And what do you think the point is of Camp Quest? Why do we get people together who all kind of are skeptical about religion, especially kids? Why do we do this?
I think it's hard for some kids to really put these ideas into words. And so having a community that's really supportive of free thought and the idea of, let's talking about religion and let's really figure out what it is, kind of helps them open up and really get it put into their own words. And then we can kind of help them understand what they're saying and maybe why they're saying it and work from there. So I think that's why we get a lot of people out. Parents want to have that kind of environment for their kids to really figure religion out, maybe.
I think that they are probably feeling somewhat lonely.
For me, I grew up in Texas, and I was one of the only atheists that I knew.
I have to say for the record that it's not like any of us are burned at the stake these days anymore, but we're certainly treated with a lot of disrespect in this country still to this day, which is unfortunate and, frankly, you know, abominable, particularly by those that supposedly follow this Jewish philosopher guy that said, love your enemy. But that's neither here nor there.
A lot of these kids come from different areas. Some of them are small towns. And I think it's really important for them to know there are other kids like them. And this shows them that there are definitely other kids and other families who feel the same way.
I think it reaches out to those kids and it helps them find a community that they'll relate to hopefully later on in life and maybe hopefully stay in touch with, because that's what it's all about. You know, we're in a stage in humanity's development where people that all think alike now, thanks to the internet and such, are getting together and they're forming communities. And it's about time we did that. So this is a big step in that process, and I think it's a great thing. So eventually we'll go off one day and found our own planet or something. I don't know.
I've attended a few, and I've noticed that for the most part there are no children at humanist meetings. And I really think that's, if you don't get the younger children at least somewhat involved and exposed to it, and I'm not talking indoctrination, but I'm saying giving kids the option of coming by and visiting other kids who have parents with similar mind, similar worldviews. I think it's a good idea, because otherwise you end up with a lot of older people just talking amongst themselves and doing things that are largely boring to children, and you never really reach those children and expose them to all these different ideas that are floating around out there. And I think that's really important to present all these different ideas in a way that they can digest and that they can have some fun with.
I think it's an important thing. I want to try and support as best I can, no matter how cranky the lack of sleep might make me.
I don't believe in Christ or any other kind of Lord. Most everybody else does, so I cannot say a word. But then I heard of Camp Quest. It's in between the trees. I begged my mom to let me go. Oh, Mom and Dad, please.
Oh, Camp Quest, you have so much for me. I know that you are wonderful and you're beyond belief. I went up into California and then into the camp. I bought my clothes and sleeping bags and books and even a lamp. A swimming and a hiking, and we even played some chess. Sitting around the campfire, I knew that this was best. Oh, Camp Quest, you have so much for me. I know that you are wonderful and you're beyond belief. So if you are an atheist and you would like to speak, just head on down to Camp Quest and have the best time as can be. You'll meet other non-believers and you'll have a lot of fun. Doing many activities and playing in the sun. Oh, Camp Quest, you have so much for me. I know that you are wonderful and you're beyond belief. Oh, Camp Quest, you have so much for me. I know that you are wonderful and you're beyond belief.
You're listening to Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine. And we're here speaking with Amanda Metzkes, president of Camp Quest, Inc. Amanda, tell us about that song we just heard.
So that's Gregory, and he actually wrote that song last year when he was at Camp Quest, the Smoky Mountains, and he adapted it in California this year.
And it's done to the Oh, Susanna
exactly
music. Before that, we heard about 5 minutes of a variety of counselors at Camp Quest West speaking about the program and the kids. And I believe there's two counselors you need to identify.
Mm-hmm. All of the counselors there got to introduce themselves, except for our two female staffers in that montage were Joy Henry from Utah, and she's a parent of two of our campers, and her husband Russ was also on staff with us. And then Adrian Mowry from California, who is an IT consultant. Mm-hmm. And I also, at this time, would like to really give a special thank you to Chris Lindstrom, the director of Camp Quest West, both for getting this thing started. I mean, what an amazing amount of work she's put in, and also for letting me come out there and do these interviews and be on staff with them, because I had a really good time.
Well, I regret to say it's July 25th. The summer is just about over, but are there any other Camp Quests out there that folks can register for?
Yeah, there are actually two coming up in August. Camp Quest Michigan runs from August 5th through the 12th. And Camp Quest Minnesota runs from August 12th through the 19th. And if you go to www.camp-quest.org, you can click on the links for Michigan or Minnesota, and you can still register. They both still have spaces open, and they might even still be accepting a couple staffers if any of you are interested in heading out there to be on staff. So check that out.
Nice.
And the website again is camp-quest.org.
That's right.
Well, it wouldn't be a proper show on summer camp if we didn't all gather around the campfire right now. Jess, man, if you can come a little closer.
Do you have any s'mores, Duncan?
I do, but we might have to microwave them in the recording studio. But we'll pretend we have a fire here. We gather around. It wouldn't be proper to have a campfire story, so I have one. This is a story by the Reverend James Huber, and it's called The Physician and the Priest.
High in the mountains, there was a small, hidden valley. In this valley, there was a small village. The village was isolated, so the villagers lacked many modern conveniences and observed many strange customs. Early one spring, a physician arrived from the lowlands. At first, the villagers were wary. The physician was a woman, and the village priest had given them very particular ideas about what kinds of work were woman's work. Being a physician wasn't on his list. With modern medicine and methods, the physician was able to help many people not helped by the villagers' simple folkways. In only a few weeks, she was able to convince the villagers to accept her. One day, the physician was sitting in the village green eating her lunch. She took out a big red apple and started to eat it. Seeing what she was doing, the priest rushed up to her. He shook his finger at her and he said, "That's no way for a lady to eat an apple." "And what's wrong with the way I'm eating this apple?" asked the physician. "A decent woman would pierce the apple with 3 iron nails and leave it sit overnight before eating the apple," fumed the priest. "Eat an apple with nails in it." "That doesn't seem like a very good idea to me. Why would I want to do that?" asked the physician. "You take the nails out before you eat the apple," said the priest. "And you do it because you are a daughter of Eve. Eve tempted Adam with an apple, thus inflicting original sin on mankind. Christ died for these sins, hung on a cross with 3 iron nails." The physician rolled her eyes. You people with your silly superstitions, she said. The priest stalked off in a huff. The physician continued eating her apples without first nailing them. Many women of the village noticed that the physician ate her apples without nailing them. Since the nails gave the apples a funny taste, many of the village women also stopped nailing their apples. After a few months, the women who stopped nailing their apples became pale and complained of having no energy. The priest declared that this was a punishment from God because they were no longer nailing their apples. The physician scoffed at this idea, saying, "These women are simply anemic. Your diets here are low in iron. Nailing the apples must have transferred some iron to the apple itself. All your women have to do is start taking an iron supplement and they'll be fine." Some of the village women went back to nailing their apples. Others started taking an iron supplement. The women of both groups quickly regained their color and energy. During the spring and summer, the physician hiked in the mountains around the village. As autumn came and the first snow started falling, the walks became impractical. The only entertainment left in the village was a dance held every Friday night in the town hall. This was fine with the physician because she enjoyed the music and lively dancing. One Friday, not long after the first snows of winter, the physician arrived at the town hall and found it quiet. The people gathered, but there was no music or dancing, and the people were quiet. "What's going on?" the physician asked. "Where's the party?" The priest answered, "It is the feast of St. Fubar, patron saint of our village. From this day until Easter Sunday, we must abstain from music, singing, dancing, and other frivolity, or face the wrath of God." "More superstitious nonsense, I see," said the physician. "Come on, let's dance." The physician was able to persuade only a few people to defy the tradition and dance. Next Friday, a few more joined in, and one of the musicians played. The Friday after that, all but one member of the band was playing, and the majority of the villagers were dancing. The priest interrupted the festivities. "This is sacrilege. You mark my words, you'll regret this. Those of you who still have faith should abandon this den of sin and join me in the church to pray quietly." Some of the villagers went to the church with the priest. Some stayed in the town hall with the physician. For several weeks, the physician and her people spent Friday nights dancing, and the priest and his people spent Friday night praying. Then one Friday night, during a particularly raucous stomp dance, there came a low rumble. The rumbling turned to a roar. The singing and dancing had triggered an enormous avalanche. The town hall was destroyed. Many villagers were trapped in the wreckage. The priest and his followers rushed to the scene of the disaster. They were able to save all of the villagers, although some were quite badly injured. When they reached the physician, she glared up at the priest. "You bastard, why didn't you tell us we would cause an avalanche?" she asked the priest. "I didn't know you would. I just knew that tradition forbade the dancing and singing at this time of year. I warned you, no one can escape the hand of God," said the priest. Just before she passed out, the physician scoffed. "This wasn't the hand of God, just a natural disaster." She was right, but the town hall was still flattened, and many people were still seriously injured. Winter turned into spring. The villagers met to decide what to do about the destroyed town hall. After some debate, they decided to rebuild. As they discussed where they'd get the materials, the physician spoke. "My cousin owns a sawmill, and he also owes me a favor. We could log the forest behind the church and use that wood to rebuild the town hall." "Sacrilege!" screamed the priest. "Those woods are the birthplace of St. Fubar himself. Great evil will befall us if we desecrate them." "Rubbish!" retorted the physician. "You can't seriously believe all this nonsense about sacred woods." "Nonsense, is it? Would that be nonsense like the iron in the apples, or nonsense like the avalanche that almost killed you?" asked the priest. "Those things had perfectly logical scientific explanations," replied the physician. "Logical scientific explanations that you failed to think of until after the fact, an oversight that has caused the very problem we're now trying to correct," the priest reminded her. The physician started to object. The suggestion that she pay attention to superstition seemed to go against everything she believed in as a woman of science. Then she thought of the rusty apples. They did work, even if the villagers didn't know why. She thought of the avalanche. It was triggered by their singing and dancing. If she had taken the priest more seriously, if she had tried to understand the reason behind the superstitions, she might have avoided the disaster. She took a deep breath and spoke, "Priest, perhaps you're right. Perhaps there is a reason why those woods were made sacred. Would you be willing to let me examine your records? If so, I might be able to find the reason." The priest started to object. The suggestion that there was a mundane reason for the sacred seemed to go against everything he believed as a man of God. Then he thought of the women who were taking mineral supplements instead of nailing apples. The apples had been adding iron to their diet. Maybe that was the real reason for the tradition, even if no one ever knew it. He thought of the avalanche. If he'd been able to give the people more of a reason than it's the way we've always done it, more of them might have listened to him. He took a deep breath and spoke. Well, we'll look through the records together, and we'll see what we can find. If the records don't show us why, maybe we can find the answers ourselves. The physician nodded and added, if we can't find a reason, we'll log the mountain, cautiously. High in the mountains, there was a small, hidden valley. In this valley, there was a small town. Physically isolated, modern communication technology keeps it in touch with the rest of the world. Even so, the townspeople still remember traditions passed down through countless generations. When a new idea comes along, they don't dismiss it, but neither do they ignore the hard-won wisdom of their ancestors.
Hello, we're the Hula Monkeys from Camp Quest, and you're listening to Humans Network News.
This cabin is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S,
bananas.
I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary. We're speaking with Amanda Metzkes, president of Camp Quest, Inc., and we just heard a bumper recorded by the campers of Camp Quest in Ohio. Thank you very much for that. Before that, we heard an actual campfire story, a humanist myth that has been read around the Camp Quest campfire. I actually tracked down a professional radio personality to read us that story, Trevor Lay. You can learn more about his work at trevorlay.com. That's L-E-Y. And I put a link to the campfire story on our website, humaniststudies.org/podcast. Look for the show notes for show number 21 to find that.
I want to, now, as someone who obviously has been to several camps and you've heard several campfire stories, can you give the Cliff Notes version of this story here for us?
Yeah, so the story is about, you know, it's kind of a humanist moral there. You want to be critical but not dismissive of ideas and practices you don't understand.
Well done.
Well, Amanda, your website for Camp Quest is camp-quest.org. It's been a real treat having you here on our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Duncan and Jess. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I think I might want to enroll in adult summer camp. What do you think, Jess?
Look out, campers.
Just keep me away from the bug juice. Everyone out there listening, don't forget to purchase a copy of Parenting Beyond Belief. It's a parenting book about raising children without religion. Amanda Metzkes and her husband, August Brunsman, have a chapter about Camp Quest.
You can find links to purchase the book and get more information at our website, humaniststudies.org/parenting.
Unfortunately, we have to switch tones to remember a pillar of the humanist community whom we recently lost over the weekend. Someone who would have really appreciated hearing about young humanists and future leaders of the humanist movement, and particularly the one young camper we heard from who was saying that she's mostly atheist and partly Jewish.
Rabbi Sherwin T. Wine, founder of Humanistic Judaism, was killed in a car crash on July 21st while vacationing in Morocco with his longtime partner, Richard McMaines. Rabbi Wine and McMaines were in a taxi cab when it was hit by another car. Wine and the taxi driver were killed instantly, while McMaines was hospitalized in stable condition.
Humanist Network News listeners will remember Rabbi Sherwin Wine from our most recent HNN podcast, number 20, where Matt Cherry and I interviewed Sherwin Wine about his work creating the humanistic Judaism movement. Rabbi Wine was dubbed by Time magazine the atheist rabbi, and it's sort of a larger-than-life moniker, but I think it was very suiting. He had a larger-than-life presence. What do you think, Jess? He was one of the most dynamic speakers at the New Humanism Conference, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. I mean, I got to just sort of sit and watch you and Matt talk to him, and
yeah,
just you could see just the wisdom and the charisma and just the energy that he had. You tell that people definitely would have learned a lot from him, just even from being in his presence.
Yeah, he was a very engaging storyteller and very funny also.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, Sherwin Wine was one of the prominent panelists at the New Humanism Conference at Harvard. He appeared with Salman Rushdie on the stage, and we have some recordings of the talk that he gave during the conference. We did not play these during the last podcast. So, Jez, why don't we play a clip of Sherwin Wine speaking at the Harvard conference?
One of the things that you do in the celebration of humanism is you talk about the human condition, and what we all know is that the humanist the human condition is absurd. No, I mean, that's, you celebrate the absurdity of the human condition. So people often ask me, well, what's your substitute for worshiping God? You worship people. I said, never. Never. And the alternative to worship for me has always been something I've treasured. It's laughter. What I want to do first is to give you the question, because frequently you hear answers and you can't figure out the question. All right. If you're trying to reach the Chinese, if you're trying to reach the Indian, do you understand? If you're trying to reach the secularized Christian world, I'd mentioned this to Salman Rushdie. I love the idea of atheism mass or atheist mass or whatever you call it. All right. You mentioned it last night, but it won't work. Because what happens is most secular Christians do Christmas. Do you know that? They rearrange it, they reinterpret it, whatever else it is, they do that. Because it's connected to their mother, their father, their grandmother. You can't sever people from their ancestors. You may try, and there will always be that group that doesn't care. So the question is it possible to have a secular Judaism, a secular Christianity, a secular Islam, a secular Hinduism, Professor Sen spoke, a secular, this Confucianism is the fundamental, right, background to Chinese culture, a kind of secular Confucianism. I mean, can you have these things? Can you retain your ancestral connection and preserve your integrity? The balancing between continuity and right? It's a balancing act, always. For some people, they don't want continuity. They just want the integrity. For some people, they're willing to sacrifice the integrity to have the what? The continuity. So they'll say things they don't believe because they want the comfort of the continuity. And so we're in this delicate, always balancing act between the two. And so that's my answer. And the answer, I think, of most humanistic Jews to the question. The question is it possible not to have an adversarial relationship to the cultures of the past, to view the religious systems of the past not only as religions, but to view them as cultures? Got the question? Got my answer? You've been wonderful. Thank you so much.
That was a very stirring speech by Rabbi Sherwin Wein, presented to the New Humanism Conference, hosted by the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard in April. Those clips appear courtesy of the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard and were also made possible in part by the Institute for Humanist Studies. You can read a eulogy of Rabbi Sherwin Wein by the humanist chaplain Greg Epstein at harvardhumanist.org. Greg was a protege of Rabbi Sherwin Wein's.
You can also hear Rabbi Wein's entire speech on our podcast page at humaniststudies.org/podcast.
For information about a memorial, visit the website of the Society for Humanistic Judaism at shj.org. Jess, we've been getting a lot of letters already about Sherwin Wein. Do you want to share one of those with our listeners?
Sure. This letter comes in from Heidi. I'm sure you've already heard the sad news, but in case you have not, Rabbi Sherwin T. Wein, featured on your most recent podcast, was killed in a car accident yesterday. Details are at www.shj.org. I was very impressed by the discussion you had with him on your podcast. In particular, I found it helpful to share with a friend, a Jewish woman who has been trying to find the nexus between her culture and her lack of belief. It seemed he had found that place that she was trying to reach and served as a champion for others like her. I'm sure he'll be missed by many. Thank you for introducing us to his wisdom.
If you would like to leave a listener comment for the H&N listener comment line, call 206-339-4168. Or you can send us an email to editor@humaniststudies.org.
And finally, we have a couple announcements to round out our show here. First, as Amanda Metzges mentioned, Camp Quest, Michigan and Camp Quest, Minnesota have some openings still, so you can get registration information at their website, camp-quest.org.
Our other office mates here at the Humanist Center, home of the Institute for Humanist Studies, the Secular Student Alliance, is looking to hire some paid interns for the fall. For information about becoming a Secular Student Alliance intern, visit secularstudents.org.
And our last announcement is that the IHS Grant Fund is approaching its deadline for grant applications. That deadline is August 31st, and you can get information from our website, humaniststudies.org.
Mm-hmm. Both Camp Quest and the Secular Student Alliance have received grants from the IHS Grant Fund, so maybe if you apply, you'll have the same luck as they have had. Transcripts of the Humanist Network News podcast and previous episodes you can download are available at humaniststudies.org/podcast.
Our weekly e-zine is available at humaniststudies.org.
Our theme music is I Ain't Afraid by Holly Near.
And we're going to take the show out with a song called Astropop by New York City-based band Lords.
I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, folks.
The Humanist Network News podcast is made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit think tank that promotes the philosophy of humanism.